All right, so we always get into these really interesting Supreme Court cases, and we usually talk about what these cases actually do. Like, what kind of new rules do they set, or what old rules get tossed out? But sometimes the biggest question isn't about the rules themselves. It's more like who gets to make those rules, right? Who decides? And today we're going deep on a case, Schwett v. Coalition, to defend affirmative action. And that's exactly what this case makes us think about.
Affirmative action is always a big discussion, and people usually focus on, is it a good thing? Or is it even allowed under the Constitution? But Schwett kind of flips that. It asks, at what level of government, like state, federal, whatever, and who can decide about policies that deal with race?
Right.
So we're talking voter power, equal protection, the courts. It's a lot. It gets pretty complex, and it's a big deal for anyone studying law.
Okay, so let's break it down, piece by piece. We got to go back to Michigan, right? That's
Yeah.
where this whole thing started. What happened there that led to this showdown at the Supreme Court?
All right, so back in 2006, Michigan voters, they passed this thing called Proposal 2. And this wasn't just like a regular law passed by lawmakers. This was a full-on change, an amendment to the Michigan Constitution.
Whoa.
Yeah, big deal. And it said straight up, no more using race or sex to give anyone an advantage or disadvantage in public education, state jobs, or government contracts, anything like that.
So, like a total ban. And that obviously hit universities like UMich hard.
Oh, absolutely. They couldn't even consider race as one factor among many in admissions anymore. It was just off the table.
Wow. So, what happened? People obviously weren't okay with that,
You
right?
bet. Advocacy groups sued right away.
Right.
They said this whole Proposal 2 thing went against the 14th Amendment, specifically the Equal Protection Clause. Everyone's supposed to be treated equally under the law.
Right. Equal protection for everyone. Okay. So, they went to court. What happened first?
So, first stop was the federal district court,
Huh.
and they actually sided with Proposal 2. They said it was okay.
Interesting. But it didn't end there, right?
Nope. The case went up on appeal to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they said, hold up, not so fast. They reversed the lower court's decision.
Okay, so what made the Sixth Circuit go a different way? What was their thinking?
They leaned on something called the political process doctrine.
The political process doctrine.
Yeah, this idea has been around for a while, developed through cases like Washington v. Seattle School District back in 82. Basically, it's all about making sure states don't rig the game, their political processes, in a way that screws over minority groups.
I see.
The idea is to keep the majority from making it super hard for minorities to get their voices heard and achieve their goals, especially when it comes to issues that directly affect them.
So the Sixth Circuit thought Proposal 2 was doing exactly that.
That's what they said. They argued Proposal 2 messed with the process, made it racialized by going after policies that were meant to help racial minorities.
Okay.
It made it way harder for these groups to fight for those policies compared to other stuff. Now they'd have to change the whole state constitution, not just talk to lawmakers or school boards. And because of this back and forth between the courts, the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
So now it's at the top. And the big question for the Supreme Court, the main issue, was whether this ban on affirmative action because of a voter-led change to the Constitution, whether that was against the Equal Protection Clause.
Exactly. The people who sued, they said putting this ban right into the state constitution created this huge obstacle for anyone trying to keep or start any policies that considered race.
Okay.
Basically, they said it was stacking the deck against minority groups in the political arena.
So what did the Supreme say? What was the final word?
They upheld Proposal 2, 6-2, but there's a twist. This wasn't a regular majority opinion, it was a plurality. Yeah. So a majority of the justices agreed on the outcome. They agreed that Proposal 2 was fine, but they didn't all agree on the why. In Schwett, six justices said, yeah, the amendment's cool, but Justice Kennedy's opinion, the main one, only had three other justices fully on board.
I see. So, what was Justice Kennedy's big argument in this plurality opinion? What was his main point?
He said, look, this case isn't about whether affirmative action is good or bad, or even if it's constitutional. The real question is who gets to decide this stuff.
Right.
He was all about the people's voice, the democratic process, voters having the right to make choices, even on tough, controversial issues like racial
Didn't
preferences.
he actually have a really strong quote about that, about voters being able to handle these decisions?
Oh, yeah, he definitely did. He said, and I quote, democracy does not presume voters are incapable of deciding an issue on decent and rational grounds.
Powerful stuff. So he's basically saying the court should respect what the voters decided here.
Exactly. That's a key takeaway from this case. But then there's the question, how come Justice Kennedy didn't see this case like those older political process doctrine cases the Sixth Circuit used?
Right, good point.
He said this was different because he didn't see any specific injury to minorities in Chouette.
Interesting.
Like there wasn't this clear discriminatory change to the political process, unlike those older cases. To him, Proposal 2 was just a broad policy choice made by everyone who voted, not some targeted move to silence a specific group based on race.
Okay, so that's Justice Kennedy's view. But other justices agreed with the outcome too, right? What were their reasons? We call this concurring opinions, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Chief Justice Roberts chimed in, and he basically agreed with the idea that affirmative action can cause more division than it solves. He said, "The way to stop discrimination is to stop discriminating." So his focus was on treating everyone the same, no matter their race. Now, Justice Scalia, he went even further. He wasn't a fan of this whole political process doctrine thing. He thought it didn't make sense. To him, bans on racial preferences are by definition colorblind, so they can't possibly go against the Equal Protection Clause.
Interesting. So they agreed on the outcome, but for different reasons. What about Justice Breyer? He's usually more liberal leaning, right?
Yeah, so Justice Breyer, he also agreed with the majority, but his reasoning was kind of a curveball. While he was okay with Proposal 2, he wasn't thrilled about unelected administrators having total control over who gets into universities.
Great.
He thought there should be more, democratic input, more people having a say in those decisions. Now, Justice Sotomayor and Justice Ginsburg, they wrote a dissent, meaning they disagreed with the majority, and they had a totally different take on the whole case.
Yeah, it sounds like they saw this very differently.
Oh, they did. Justice Sotomayor wrote this really powerful dissent. She said the majority was basically sweeping the history of racial inequality under the rug, ignoring how laws that seem neutral can actually have really discriminatory effects.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Her big argument was that Proposal 2 was designed to reconfigure the political process to disadvantage racial minorities. And that's a direct quote.
So, how did she back that up? What was her reasoning?
Okay, so she said that by sticking this ban right into the state constitution, it made it so much harder for minority groups to fight for these policies later on.
Oh, I see.
Before, they could lobby lawmakers, talk to university boards, work within the system. But now they'd have to change the whole darn state constitution through another vote. That's way harder to do, requires a lot more resources, and it's just a bigger lift all around. She said this basically shifted the power dynamic, making it much harder for them to get their voices heard.
And she had this really striking analogy to explain this, right?
Back here.
Something about a catch-22.
Exactly. She says, like, minority groups are in this impossible situation. They need to fix systemic inequality, but now they have to ask the very same majority that might have put the ban in place in the first place. It's like they're stuck. They can't really win.
So this Schwitt decision, it had big consequences beyond Michigan, right? What's happened since then?
Oh, yeah. This wasn't just some local Michigan thing, it had a ripple effect. For one, it basically gave the green light to other states that wanted to do the same thing. Like, remember California's Proposition 209? Well, Schwette basically said, yep, that's fine. And some legal experts even see Schwette as the foundation for later Supreme Court rulings that put even more limits on using race in college admissions, like that big Students for Fair Admissions v. Harvard case back in 2023.
Yeah, I remember that one. So after Schwette, it got harder to say that banning affirmative action was messing with the political process in a way that hurt minorities.
Yeah, you got it. Schwette made it much tougher to win those kinds of arguments in court. The Supreme Court basically said, look, voters decided, we respect that. They signaled a hands-off approach, suggesting courts shouldn't be so quick to jump in when states decide things through the ballot box, especially when it comes to affirmative action.
But it's really important to remember, the Supreme Court didn't say no to affirmative action everywhere.
100%. This ruling was very specific. It was about voters in a state, in this case Michigan, having the power to say no to policies that consider race within their own borders.
Right, within their own state.
Other states, even individual public schools and universities in states that don't have these bans, they can still do affirmative action if they want to, as long as it fits within the law.
Gotcha. So let's wrap this up. For all the law students listening, what are the big lessons from this Schwette deep dive? What should they be thinking about?
I'd say there are three big takeaways. First, judicial restraint. Even with tough emotional issues like race and equality, courts often step back and let the democratic process play out, especially when it's something like a voter initiative. Second, doctrinal limits. The political process doctrine, even though it's still part of constitutional law, is narrower after Schwett. Courts might be less likely to use it to strike down laws. And third, federalism. States have a lot of power to make policies within their borders, and that includes things like race-neutral rules in schools and workplaces.
Wow, those are some really important points. You know, this whole conversation about Schwett, it really shows that this whole debate about equality, it's not just about the specific policies, it's about who gets to decide what those policies can be, like who has the authority. It makes you think about how to balance the power of voters with protecting the rights of minorities in a country as diverse and complex as ours.
Absolutely. Schwett is still relevant today. It makes us ask some tough questions about what democracy really means and how the courts should protect fundamental rights. It makes you think.
Definitely makes you think. And sometimes that's the most important thing a court case can do. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.